scratchy throat
Ugh.
and kind of exhausted and tested negative,
Yeah.
the good news, but there's all these other things. And I just thought today, I'm going to power through this.
Yeah.
I'm going to eat a lot of fresh oranges. And I'm going to say little prayers because it's the holiday. And
Exactly.
but I think
Yeah.
it's, first of all, lovely to see you, and you are the most together looking flu patient I've ever
Oh,
seen,
thank you
because
very much. That probably means
the medicine is working.
the
But it's an interesting place to start, and also just wonderful to see you, because the last time I saw you, you were with your son.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
he must be, 24 years old by now, because
It's been a while. A lot has changed.
he was a beautiful little boy then. I'm sure he's, but it's I actually, the last time we were together, you were with your son and your mom,
Yeah, exactly.
which is the whole family. But
Yeah.
I think it's interesting to have the conversation about you as mom always, because I think it brings up so many issues of, when you talk to, frankly, a lot of men who are composers and dads,
Yeah.
it doesn't come up.
No.
It just doesn't come
Yeah.
up. They're just doing their work. They're like a lot of men focused on their work. And oh, by the way, I have a family
Yeah.
somewhere, either in this house or at a home, and I'm in the studio. You are a hands-on mom.
Very much so,
So hands-on that you're getting the same germs.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And I know you've spoken about it, but when you became a mom, do you think that your music changed?
Yes, I do. I do think it changed. And it's interesting that you start talking about this because I was listening to such a great podcast today about if it's possible to do deep work and be a parent. And I thought it was so interesting because especially in this line of work that you know in the movie industry, it's like this norm that we have that you're supposed to be working on 5,000 projects, you're supposed to be working 20-hour days, 7 days a week, and if you're not, you're failing. And I thought it was so interesting to just reflect a bit upon this because I think there's so much to observe about this way of thinking, and I think it's also I met a girl the other day who was she was trying to get some internships with some composers in the States, and it was all about the she said it was the only question she got was how many minutes could she write, and I thought that was also so in connection to this, like I thought it was so interesting because there's all these like there's all these metrics, there's all these measurements of how much, how long, how many, how many minutes, how many awards, how many, hours do you work, how many films have you scored? And I just think it's so interesting because it's so far away from how I think about music, because I think music and art are so they don't have anything to do with metrics in my opinion and the way that I have studied and made and composed music. It has all to do with feeling, how you're feeling, how the journey of what you compose, like how you get there, how it feels when you get there, and what the essence is of how you create. And I think that's so interesting in connection to being a parent, because being a parent means that you, you know, you're not going to be able to work 20 hours.
When is the last time you made s'mores? Crunchy, gooey, and with everyone's favorite Hershey's milk chocolate. Whether you're making new memories with your friends beside a campfire, inviting neighbors over for a casual cookout, or cooking s'mores in the oven with your family on a rainy day, enjoy some more of each other with Hershey's S'mores. Find Hershey's milk chocolate bars at your favorite retailer. Time to s'more some more.
You know, per day, 7 days a week. And I mean, unless you want to just have your child in daycare or have babysitter. My son doesn't even have a babysitter. He's never had a babysitter. Oh, wow. So I'm a very, you know, I'm a very hands-on parent because, you know, my mom was working all the time when I was a kid. And you know, because she had to work three jobs to support us. And I really, you know, I don't feel like I, you know, that was just what she needed to do. But I feel like, you know, as a parent, I wanted to be there for my child more. And that just means that I, you know, I had to kind of realign my values with the, you know, time commitment and project commitment, you know. And I had to really... I had to really just make sure that I was, you know, putting the work that I feel like I need to put in as an artist, as well as the work as I need to do as a parent, but in a way that was, you know, fulfilling, both creatively and, you know, parently.
Apparently. Apparently. Mm. I think you have just identified two enormous topics.
Yeah.
I mean, something that, and for me, far more interesting than, what microphone do you like to use on your, you know, that topic, not so interesting to me.
Yeah.
The topic for a number of reasons. I think in the two big areas that you just identified, first of all, it touches me deeply because I was an artist who had started to be an artist who became a father, and everything had to change for me because I was very conflicted, super conflicted about how self-involved am I allowed to be? How narcissistic can I continue to be?
Mm.
And so, and I think that it's a difficult challenge, but men have this, and I was graced with Mrs. Kraft, who was sort of, I'm kind of going to work part-time and really be full-time mommy while you go off and conquer the world.
Mm-hmm.
Very traditional.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Though I found it much harder to be an artist. So I sort of, I felt when you were talking about it, first of all, no surprise, you are looked to as such a trend-setting icon of composers, both artistically and just the kind of life that you lead, that in some ways the question you're asking is being answered by the way you're deciding to proceed, which is full-time parently and full-time artistically. So I sort of hope you will never stop because others will look to you to say, well, she does this. She can't take a gig because she's going to be with her child.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to stop at dinner time because she wants to have dinner with her family. So there's a part of me that says, please don't stop because we need to see that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think the bigger question that's asked is, as artists, what level of commitment are we required? I always used to say, and I'd love to hear your thoughts, when someone said, well, what is it like to be a songwriter, a composer, and what kind of commitment do you feel you're making? I'd say you only have to be willing to give one thing, your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
I can't figure out how to make music if I'm not living it 100%.
But what I feel like, you know, I think, you know, in connection to, because I, you know, how I changed musically after having my son, I think, you know, and every parent will know this, that having, you know, having a child really changes you emotionally, you know, because you experience a love different than any other love that you've ever experienced in your life, you know, and I think that as an artist, having your emotional palette open up like that is a fantastic, you know, it's a fantastic thing, because all of a sudden it's not all about yourself, you know, as can be the you know, so much the case. When you are an artist, you know, it's very easy to get very self-obsessed and you know, obsessed about what you're writing, obsessed about how your process is, obsessed about working 20 hours a day, like all of these things. And all of a sudden, when you have a child, and I guess, like, you know, traditionally more so mothers than fathers, as you're saying, you know, because I think traditionally, you know, it seems like, or at least that's what I was listening to today. Like being a mother comes with a wide array of guilt trips that are apparently, you know, yeah, being a parent, exactly. But I think, you know, often so this the guilt is stronger for women. You know, not doing enough, not doing the right. Having the right, you know, anything really, you know, the right diet, the right laundry detergent or whatever, you know, you're kind of guilt ridden. But I think this is really interesting in connection to making art and creating something, you know, because when I had my son, the practical thing of what changed so drastically for me is that I couldn't be on tour all the time like I was before, which meant that I had, you know, I had to just be, you know, because I used to just like tour 330 days of the year, you know, before I had them. So it meant that I had to just be more stationary, which meant that I had way more time to work on composition work that I didn't have before, which in return, like, you know, just made much more time for film music, and which in return, I think, kind of, you know, changed my career path really drastically and hopefully,
love that.
You know, I think for better, you know, and that's kind of all, you know, all because of my son. You know, I probably wouldn't be doing as much film music if it wasn't for him.
That's so interesting. Mm-hmm. Selfishly, I made a similar pivot. That's where I said it wasn't easy to be an artist. I started to make myself available to have a day job, kind of maybe producing or being a studio guy or something, and completely transformed from being an artist to have, because I had children. And that was important. Do you find that, well, first of all, I don't know if you've had this experience, your son, who was wonderful. I still, it's 22 years later, I was doing the math while he spoke. When my oldest was 13 years old, we had a plan, since he was probably 10, that we were going to go to New York City for his 13th birthday. Mm-hmm. Dad and son trip. And Michael Kamen's X-Men movie went a day over in the scoring. I don't know if you've had this moment. And I had to say to my son, we're not leaving Friday, we're leaving Saturday. Because I, you know, you do that thing as a parent and as an executive and you know that he's 35, married, happy, fully mature human being who still will say to me occasionally, you still owe me one day in New York. You know that, don't you? So I just,
yeah, they don't, I want to warn anything, you.
I want to warn you that that's there.
Yeah.
You, I know you love to do something to calm yourself. I was reading about you enjoying something that I think a lot of us do, yoga and meditation. Mm. But in this context, does your boy ever knock on the door when you're deep in the middle of downward facing dog?
Of course
I mean,
he does.
Oh my God, good.
Of course he does.
I wondered if there was any sacred space, because I've had that too, doing yoga. It was like, Dad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, can I
just
5 minutes. 20 minutes. Yeah. It's no place safe.
No.
But I got a studio out of the house. Mm. Is your studio in the house? I did what dads do.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm leaving the kids here.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to it. I'm going to get a studio down the street.
Yeah.
Do you work and compose at home?
Well, I do have a studio outside the home, but we're currently moving studios. So we're currently building a new studio. So right
in Berlin.
In Berlin, yeah, yeah, yeah. So currently, I am working from home, which is interesting. But normally I work outside of the home. But I find it's best to, for making sure that I'm keeping up with my yoga and meditation practice, which is very important to me. I tried to,
daily.
Yeah, daily. I have a daily practice, and
I'm envious. Yeah.
Well, I find it sounds. I mean, I live a very, quite the boring life. You know, I'm very kind of like, I really love routine. So I love, I know that my day is just going to be great if I manage to do yoga and then meditate and then practice and then, start writing. You know, that's a perfect day for me, but I think it doesn't have to be, hours. Like, even if I do like 5 minutes of each, that's even enough for me, just to show up like a little bit, because I think it just means that I've just checked in. And I think that that's really important, both as an artist and a parent, I found, because I've had phases where where I'm horrible at showing up for myself, obviously, as everyone does. And I've just learned that it doesn't take a lot. And it just means that, if I show up for myself, just even in the tiniest bit, it just means that I have a bit stronger connection to my body and to my breath and to my mind, which means that I can be more present for everything that I'm doing. And I think that, because coming back to what we were talking about before, like, whether or not you can work, you can write for 20 hours a day, or like, how long you can write. But I've found that for me, it has, the way that I write and the way that I create, I think has much more to do with how present I am with what I'm writing and the quality of what I create. And by quality, I mean, I'm not saying that it's, the best art in the world or the best music in the world, but by quality, I mean that it's the most
authentic.
Yeah, the most connected to what I feel like I really have to say, because there are, obviously, I'm the same as anyone. Like, sometimes what I create is connected and sometimes it's not. And when there's a disconnect, then I feel like it's lacking in quality, because there's less there's less truth in there, so that the less of a connection I have to myself, the less I feel I'm connected to what I create. And that at the end of the day is much more important to me than sitting in front of my computer or in front of an instrument or whatever for 20 hours, because I'll write much faster and I'll write much more connected music, the more kind of connected, simply to my joints that I am. Because I think it's a very, creativity, I think it's a very fragile process, I feel, but it is very basic as well. Like it's very, it's very elemental. I think that the more fluidity you have in your joints and in your ligaments, and the more free your mind is, the more fluidity and freedom you will have in you know what you create. And I think it's really as basic as that. And you know, the more forceful you are towards yourself, and you know, the time you put in, or the metrics, the sportsmanship, if you will, of writing, you know, the
I
more forceful.
Athletic.
Yes, exactly. And it's like, it's the athleticism that I don't connect with. You know, I don't connect with that way of writing. You know, so for me, it's all about. And it says, you know, I can just as long as I just make sure that I have these basic things that I check in with, you know. I know my back is going to be a little bit straighter, and I know that what I'm writing it'll be a bit more connected.
You realize that we can't share this in Hollywood because these are revolutionary ideas. It's heresy that you would take care of yourself before
doing 20.
But Matt, I know you had, because we left off with
the last,
you.
Yeah, the last 2.5 years have been so wild, but we spoke to you before pre-Chernobyl release, pre-Joker release, pre-Oscars, pre-Emmys, congratulations on all of your many successes.
Tar and Woman Talking.
Yes, those, of course, the latest of this, but I wanted to ask you about going into the pandemic, because a lot of, this is just the career track, you know, obviously, because we're talking about the balance of career and being a parent and all of that. But you are at the peak of your career so far in film music as a composer, winning an Oscar, and the pandemic is setting in. I'm curious about the pressure that added to you, and maybe phone calls that you were suddenly getting, but also we're kind of in this weird, you know, period where things are not moving forward the way that they ordinarily might.
Well, do you want my honest answer?
Please.
Only.
It was, for me, it was actually kind of nice. because I, you know, I'm really not someone that, you know, I've never sought out much attention, and I've never been very comfortable with a lot of attention. And you know, I've been making music for over 20 years, you know, just in my own little bubble, and you know, not that many people have been, you know, paying any attention to what I've been doing, you know, most of that time. And that was just, you know, quite nice, you know, because it just meant that I was just, you know, I was, and I'm very grateful for that, because, you know, I feel like I had lots of time just by myself to really settle into who I am and what I want to create, and, you know, without this pressure. So I feel like, you know, obviously when all of a sudden you're kind of thrown into the limelight, you know, because that kind of happened to me quite suddenly. And
like Hilda.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, for most people, you know, they were like, wow, who is this person and where did she come from? And like, you know, all of a sudden, you know, a lot of people are interested. And I think if I hadn't had the 20 years before, it would have probably been a lot more confusing, you know, and it certainly was confusing as well, you know, but I feel like I know quite well who I am and you know, what kind of person I am and what kind of artist I am. And I think that, you know, all of that, sudden interest in me, it just meant that I had to, you know, I was going out seeing people a lot more than I normally do, because normally I don't see very many people, you know, and that was kind of, took quite a lot of effort for me just to be out and about so much. So for me, I was like, oh, I could really do it sometime, just like not traveling and not seeing anyone. And boom, like the pandemic hit just then. So it kind of, and I kind of felt like I needed to, like after all of that, you know, kind of getting married to Mr. Oscar, because you kind of like winning an Oscar, you kind of get this addition to your name, because all of a sudden you're not just Hilde Guðnadóttir, you're Academy Award winning Hilde Guðnadóttir. So it's kind of like, you know, getting married and getting this addition to your addition to your name, which is pretty
Mrs. Oscar. Yeah,
exactly, which is kind of funny, but I think for me it was just the perfect it was kind of perfect to just, you know, I didn't need to explain myself to anyone because no one was allowed to go out or see anyone anyway. Oh, you know, so that. I kind of took the opportunity to just rejoice in being at home.
It sort of fits your whole plan in that you get this great gift of a moment, but it's not a gift necessarily that you needed. I remember when after Joker, I think we had a conversation, you know, what are you going to do next? And it was a little bit of, I'm going to take some time. And I thought, that's anathema to Hollywood. Most people would say, oh, I have 18 movies lined up.
Yeah.
I thought, wait, you're going to take some time? It's interesting to hear this because what you're describing is, unless I'm missing something, it's very different from Lydia Tarr.
Mm, yeah.
What you're describing
is someone who's
self or Linda Tarr, which you find out. What a brilliant way to find that out. You see it on a thing on her wall in the Cate Blanchett movie. Mm-hmm. But she, as you're speaking, I'm thinking, she's self-obsessed. Mm-hmm. It's about her only. And look what happens to her. Mm. And I'm far more interested in hearing about how people negotiate their life than how they create, you know, film music, which is fabulous. But talking to artists about what it's like to live in the world is so fascinating. That being said, however, did you write in the movie Tar the music that she plays on the piano and picks out those notes? Okay, good, because I was wondering. And when there's a scene, for all of you who haven't seen the amazing movie Tar, where she's working on her own composition, and I think her daughter comes over and changes a note, maybe raises it a half step. And did you make that decision too?
Yes, yeah. It was the cellist that she's
cellist. Yeah, you're right. Exactly. The cellist comes over and says, "Maybe you should try the E flat or whatever it was."
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Which I loved more. Yes. I loved the cellist's edit.
Exactly.
It was more emotional for me, that melody.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's kind of.
But I just wondered, did you write?
I did. Yeah. 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 So, and that's what I found so interesting, because I think, because I feel like a lot of people get a little bit shy about classical music and about not knowing enough about classical music to understand it, and therefore, you know, they can't share their feelings about it because, you know, they don't know enough to have an opinion. And I always feel a bit, you know, I always think that's a bit sad, because I think music, any music, you know, I don't think you have to have any degree in order to appreciate it or not appreciate it, you know. Just, you know, I think music should be able to speak to us on an emotional level rather than to our intelligence, you know, and what we've studied. So I thought that it was so because Lydia Tarr is so brilliant in this movie, and she's like, you know, on the top of her career, as you say, and she's such an unstoppable force, you know. That's the persona that she presents outwardly, but you know, we do find out that she has a much more fragile side to her. And I think that, you know, the process of her writing music had to be completely the opposite to the brilliance and bravado that she's presenting on stage. And I think that, you know, writing a melody is something that an audience would probably understand much better than if she's writing a chord progression or if she's writing something a bit more complicated. So I wanted it to be very clear to everyone, you know, what she was going through and the doubts that she had about herself. And also that, you know, because in these like small musical changes that you can do, and it's so great that it spoke to you so strongly, because that's exactly how it spoke to me, like the, or how I wrote the melody originally was that the way that the cellist then changed it into. And I was like, that's the, you know, that's the how the melody should be, you know. And Lydia Tarr is like, you know, the, her process is not seeing it as you know, as you know, with the connection, because she's not connected, you know. So, and then by just changing this half step, all of a sudden it changes everything, you know, in the melody. And I think
that's unbelievable to me.
I think that's so interesting. Just by this tiny change, you can change so much.
But it goes from the head.
Yeah.
That melody she had or you wrote was intellectual. And I thought, okay, that's why people don't understand classical music.
Yeah.
It's kind of heady. The cellist changes one note and it's emotion, and it became
I'm so happy.
And it's almost those two characters maybe are intellectual, and the cellist is clearly passionate and vibrant and connected. And so I never really, until this conversation, realized, I knew that the note, you know, I'm watching the movie, you change the note, and I kind of go, oh, I like that one better.
Yeah.
I didn't think about the resonance of why. And I thought it's a more emotional feeling.
Yeah.
But what a great film. And, of course, Women Talking is such a new style for you. And I think that theme is going to, I hate to say it, but you're going to have another marriage ceremony, I think, with Mr. I don't want to jinx it, but that theme is one of those great movie themes.
Yeah. I feel really strongly about it too. It's a theme that it's a theme that's lived with me for a long time. And I always, you know how sometimes you write music and you just know it has a place in the world, you know, and this place just never had presented itself. And I thought that when the time is right, this melody will resonate, and this melody will have a, you know, will have a life. And when the time came and this movie came and I was, you know, I was struggling a little bit with approaching this subject with the amount of openness and connectivity that Sarah was wanting to approach, because I was just so angry on behalf of these women. I was so angry and I was so sad. And then I remember this melody and I just thought, this is the place, like this is where it has to live, and this is exactly the place that this melody belongs, you know. And it just married this film, you know, this story. And I'm so grateful for it, and I'm so grateful that that this melody got the home that it deserved in this incredible film. I just think it's so gorgeous, you know. It's so heartbreaking and heartwarming at the same time, and I think it just speaks to our times in such a beautiful and important way. And I think Sarah's vision, both, you know, for this film and as an activist and as a writer, I don't know if you've read her book, but I really, really strongly recommend her, highly and strongly recommend her book, because it's just, she has such a beautiful and inspiring way of seeing things, and parenthood is one of them, which I think is so fantastic. Like, she, speaking about being a working parent, it was so important to her that the shooting days finished early enough for people to be able to go home and put their kids to sleep, you know. And I think that speaks so much about how this film is made, and the love and the care that is put into this film, and the love and care that Sarah provides for her people, you know, her collaborators and her fellow artists. And it's just, it's so inspiring. I loved working with her, and I loved getting to do it.
And to even hear that, it makes, my first thought is, how many men directors said, let's take a break so I can go home for dinner. Yeah. Not a lot that I can remember. So I just will leave it there.
Yeah.
But so I treasure these stories, and I hope that you're setting a new standard for all of us.
And Hildur, how do you feel given that there's been a lot of talk? This is ramping up again. You're going to start getting calls again, a lot more calls probably. But there's a very real possibility that you are nominated for 2 scores this year. How do you feel about that?
Well, you know, it's the honestly how I feel about that is Nick Cave wrote this incredible letter. I don't know if you've come across this. This is another recommendation to everyone that listens to this podcast. He wrote a letter when he received the MTV Awards, or he was supposed to receive the MTV Awards. And he politely declined because he said that, you know, with the utmost respect, my creativity is too sensitive to be brought into the world of awards and into this environment. And you know, he you can Google this letter. It's online. And because he obviously, you know, is a master of words, and he phrases it very eloquently. But I basically, you know, I find it very important to remember his words and to remember his way of honoring his creativity through all this talk of awards, because obviously, you know, it is, you know, huge honor and a wonderful, you know, a wonderful opportunity to receive these awards and you know, to be nominated or even to be, you know, considered to be nominated. And I think it's been you know, a wonderful thing to get to experience. But I think at the same time, it's not why I create, you know. It's and even though I'm very honored and I'm very flattered, but it's not the driving force of my creativity, you know, I love the opportunity to get to celebrate filmmaking, you know, and to celebrate
beautiful,
you know, creativity, and to celebrate, you know, my fellow composers and fellow artists. And I think it's so fantastic, for example, this year that all the branches are being celebrated again, you know, that everyone has, that all the branches have a chance to come up there. And I think that is a cause for real celebration, you know, because I think it's really important, I think, in a world where everything has to be faster and more entertaining, or that's kind of what people perceive is the direction that we want to go towards, you know. But at the end of the day, I'm not sure it really is, you know, because I think that we're also underestimating, you know, what the joy that I find in the Oscars is just, you know, it's all these people that have just worked so hard, and they've dedicated their lives and often, you know, the times with their family to bring these wonderful stories to our, you know, to our screens and to our attention, and, you know, stirred up all these wonderful feelings in us. And I think that's, you know, I really cherish the opportunity to get to celebrate with all of these people. But it's not the driving force for what I do. And you know, but if I do get nominated, I will be there to celebrate with everyone else, you know.
I cherish the opportunity to speak to you.
Thank you.
And I think that you've just given me a good idea to bring back to at least the music branch, which is, we're going to have a family Oscars where everyone that's nominated gets free seats.
Yes.
So they can bring their entire family to the show, because we want to show that the music branch cares deeply about being slow and thoughtful about all aspects, so that we lead a resonant life because that's actually what counts as much as the work we do. The relationships we have are what really get us through the day.
I think
this has been one of my favorite conversations, as it always
yeah,
is,
same.
Because we got to talk about real things. Hildur, can we send you some emergency or some oranges or some call? Is there a pharmacy in Berlin that has the right medicine? I hope you feel
oh,
better.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. I think the medicine that my husband brought me is kicking in. So I am therefore able to have this conversation at all.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Well, I just appreciate it. I love seeing you, and hearing your point of view. For those of you that are listening, Hildur has two amazing scores currently available and coming out, TAR and Women Talking, and they're both remarkable. And now you get a chance to hear why they are remarkable, hearing the composer's point of view. Hildur, thank you.
Thank you, Hildur. Yeah.